welcome to this week's episode of Aquadocs, the podcast that keeps you up to date on all things aquatic medicine. I'm your host, Michelle Greenfield. This week, I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Brittany Jones, the Deputy Director of Conservation Biology, Sound and Health at the National Marine Mammal Foundation. Brittany and her team have identified correlations between dolphin vocalizations and health parameters. On this episode, we're going to discuss the project that she's developing to assess and maybe even predict dolphin health when we aren't there in person. So let's jump right in. Hi, Brittany. Welcome to Aquadocs.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. When I was first introduced to some of your research, in particular, the project that we're going to be talking about today, I was absolutely amazed at the project and was so excited to see where it was going. So I can't wait for all of our listeners today to learn more about how to monitor the health and well-being of dolphins through passive acoustic monitoring. So just through hearing them when you're not even there. It's super, super cool. So thank you for being here.
No, I appreciate your enthusiasm and all your awesome questions when we were talking about the project during your internship. So I'm thrilled to be here to chat more.
Awesome. So before we get into the whole project, can you tell our listeners a story that really helped shape where you are today?
Absolutely. The kickoff point for me was when I was an undergraduate and I was in school on the south side of Chicago where I grew up. And I was doing research on this invasive species of Quaker parrot. And as we all did, I loved dolphins, loved marine mammals, et cetera. And I remember saying to my professor at the time, you know, I'm really enjoying doing research. You know, what would be amazing is if someday I could study dolphins. And I distinctly remember him chuckling and being like, yeah, you know, we all wish we could study dolphins. It's such a small field and such a niche field. You would have had to already be on the coast somewhere and volunteering since you were knee high to get your foot in the door there. And I remember going home and that was exactly the motivation that I needed to start reaching out to every facility that I could find on the interwebs that house marine mammals and be like, please, what can I do? How can I help? How can I contribute to get involved? And I think that was a big push for me.
Wow. I feel like we all go through that at some point. I remember when I was first getting involved, before I even applied, I literally Googled dolphin internship, dolphin veterinary, marine mammal internship, marine mammal, and any facility that came up, I put an application out. And there were probably like 30 or 40 applications. And all you need is one person to take a chance on you. And so you went from parrots. And then what happened after that?
Yeah, so that I did the same thing. I emailed any email address I could find. And like you said, you only need one to respond. I had two that responded and I found myself accepting an internship at Dolphins Plus in Key Largo, Florida. And I was actually the first research intern. They had already accepted all their animal care and training interns. But with my experience with research and in my email, I kind of talked about wanting to do research with the animals. The intern coordinator said, we do have a PhD here who's interested in starting a research internship. I'll send her your stuff over. And Holly called and said, what job do you want to have when you grow up? And I said, I hate to tell you this, but I'm pretty sure it's your job. And I got the internship. And yeah, that was my first experience working with dolphins.
That's amazing. So you got the internship, you started doing more and more. And then how did you decide how you wanted to go about your PhD and developing a project for that? Because trying to come up with a project and find an advisor specifically for a niche field can be quite challenging.
Absolutely. One of the things that I tend to recommend for people who are interested in going back to graduate school is to find recent publications that you find interesting, that you genuinely enjoy reading, and find out what affiliation those authors have and reach out to them. That tends to be a really great starting point. Send them an email saying, I loved your work. What scientist doesn't want to hear that? And do you have any opportunities open for a graduate student or an intern or a research associate, et cetera? And oftentimes, even if they don't, they might know someone who's Jason or someone they work with who is affiliated with the university. So that is what I would recommend. I ended up meeting Dr. Stan Kuchai, who was from the University of Southern Mississippi when I was at Dolphins Plus as an intern and was helping out with some of their data collection while he was in town. So for me, that was an obvious and easy first step. So I applied for the PhD program at the University of Southern Miss. And when I was doing my research there is when I started to really realize that I loved the communication aspect. I always wanted to know more about what they were saying to each other. What did the whistles mean? What did the sounds they made mean? And there wasn't a big focus of that in Dr. Kuchai's lab at the time, but he was supportive of me learning and going down that path. As I started to do that, a couple of the other lab members also started to do that. So we suddenly had this little cohort of people studying dolphin acoustics in the marine mammal behavior and cognition lab. And so Stan actually reached out to Dr. Vincent Yannick, who was at the University of St. Andrews studying dolphin communication and bioacoustics, and asked him to come down to do a course for us in the summer. And it was through that course I got to meet Dr. Yannick and realized that I wanted to be in a lab that was solely focused on marine mammal acoustic communication. So I ended up getting my master's with Dr. Kuchai and then switching over to get my PhD at St. Andrews, where I was able to study really specific dolphin communication and learn a lot from Vincent and the other people at the Sea Mammal Research Unit there.
Amazing. Well, thank you for sharing a little bit of your background. Hopefully that's helpful for some of our listeners interested in PhD. I do want to transition to talk about your Sound and Health project because it's super cool. So can you give a basic overview of what you're doing with this project?
Absolutely. So the Sound and Health Project is the brainchild of Dr. Sam Ridgway. So I am privileged to be able to carry on that work. It was his idea that we could learn a lot about the animals' health and welfare solely based on listening to them. And this makes a lot of sense if you think about how we do this with humans. We can start to tell that our significant other, or your child, or your parent is sick. You can start to hear the raspiness in their voice or the nasal quality. You could also tell if someone's exhausted, maybe feeling down, their speech slow. Down, they might get quieter. You can tell if someone's really excited and amped up, right? Listening to human speech, we actually pick up a lot of information about both health and welfare of humans based on those characteristics of speech as opposed to just the words that we're saying. And so that was the idea that Sam had regarding animals. And the cool thing about dolphins is that they actually rely on their acoustic communication and acoustics for their navigation. So they rely on acoustics arguably even more than humans do. So he really thought that this was an understudied idea that we can learn about their health and welfare based solely on listening.
Nice. And so some basic stuff here about dolphin sound. They emit signature whistles, which is a critical component of your project. So can you describe exactly what those are?
Absolutely. So dolphins produce multiple different sounds, clicks for echolocation, but they also produce these tonal whistles for communication. And they produce a number of different types of whistle. What classifies them as types is the pattern of pitch change over time. And the one that is their signature whistle is the one that they produce most commonly when they're separated from their conspecifics. That's what sort of defines the signature whistle. And it's essentially a unique whistle contour that's distinctive to that specific animal. It sort of serves like a name, like for us, right? That's my individual identifier. Or a voice, because when I'm speaking, if you know me, you know it's me based solely on my voice.
And so if an animal's in a situation of danger or stress, it could emit its signature whistle more frequently?
Yeah, you would expect if an animal were to experience an emergency or something, that they would emit their signature whistle at a high rate. The goal would be that it would elicit helping behavior. It would elicit other animals to come to them. Other animals perceive who it is from the signature whistle, the location of that animal. And we believe that they can perceive a lot of other information from those different features emitted in that signature whistle. So when they're swimming around with friends and family, you actually might expect that they wouldn't produce their signature whistle at an incredibly high rate. They might be able to produce other whistle contours as they're chatting away. But when they really need to get the attention of other animals and say, hey, this is me, this is where I'm at, and this is what I need, you're expecting that they're going to produce their signature whistle.
Gotcha. And basic question here. Obviously, you're saying that in times of stress or in a moment where you're like, come find me, they'll emit their signature whistles. But how are you as a researcher able to actually know that this specific whistle, the sound that you're hearing, is an individual's signature whistle?
Absolutely. So one of the benefits of being able to partner with the Navy dolphins is they go open water swimming every day. They spend time as part of their routine training in above ground pools. They can transport other places. So it gives us unique opportunities to record that animal when they are away from other animals. So we know with 100% certainty that this is this animal's whistle. So then we can identify, okay, this is the most common whistle produced by this animal when they're separated from their specifics, and we know that's their signature whistle. And therefore, we have created what we call our vocal catalog of each animal's typical whistles. We know what their signature whistle is. We know if they have shared whistles with other group mates that they both produce commonly. We know non-signature whistles that they also produce a fair amount. And we create these vocal catalogs to keep track of each animal's whistle repertoire.
Can you describe the process of how you capture those whistles and you put a hydrophone in the water and what that is and how you do it?
Absolutely. So hydrophone is just an underwater microphone. So it allows us to record the different sounds that are being produced in the water at that time. So when it's just one animal, we can put the hydrophone in the water and we can actually live watch what we call a spectrogram. So it's a picture of the sound. So we're able to really see the pattern of that whistle in image formation. So on the x-axis, you just have time. And then on the y-axis, you just have pitch. So you can see the whistle as it changes and goes up and down in pitch. You can see these different patterns. We can recognize them that way. We can also listen to the sounds live, and we can also hear the different whistles. You start to pretty quickly be able to tell the difference between the animals, different signature whistles, using just your ears.
And I know you are trying to get lots of different examples of these signature whistles in your acoustic physical exams. So what do those entail?
Yes. So one of the ways that we set out to up the amount of signature whistle examples is that we actually work with the training staff to what's called capture the signature whistle on a hand signal, which all that means is that we can ask the dolphin to produce a whistle, similar to if you train your dog to be able to bark on command. It's the same idea. So now we have 17 different dolphins that all, when you give them the thumbs up, respond back with their signature whistle. So now we have the dolphins sink underwater every single week. We give them the thumbs up and we record their signature whistles from just right in front of their melon. So very close, we get nice clear examples of their signature whistles every week from our hydrophones. And those are what we call our acoustic physicals.
Which I have had the great pleasure of participating in. And I will say they are quite fun, but you and your team are fantastic because you go down there, you ask the dolphin for the behavior, they give their whistle, and it takes less than a minute in some of them and you move on. It's amazing.
Yes, we've gotten very efficient and the dolphins seem to enjoy it because it's an easy A plus that they get. They're like, yeah, I can tell you my name. I've got this. Right.
So there's a bigger purpose here for being able to ask a dolphin its name, record it, and get these signature whistles.
Yes. So this current grant that we're working on, the goal is to develop machine learning or deep learning and artificial intelligence or neural networks, basically to use the pattern recognition abilities of computers to be able to try and find patterns that humans might not be able to notice or perceive. So our goal is to figure out if we can develop a model that can actually classify the health status of a dolphin based solely on those whistles. For humans, this is one of the fastest growing and most well-funded biotechnology projects that's happening right now, is to try and be able to have things like apps on your smartphone be able to classify disease states from just little voice recordings. So one of the big pushes recently was COVID-19. There were a lot of apps that were asking you to record yourself saying the same sentence every morning, and then you're putting in, do I have COVID-19 or do I not have COVID-19? And that is a way to train the model to try and be able to predict just from a voice recording whether someone has a specific disease state. And they're doing this with all sorts of things: Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, depression, respiratory disease, heart failure, all sorts of things. So it's a really big push. So we're trying to apply some of those basic concepts to dolphins and dolphin whistles. So we need all of those whistles, because for the model to be able to pick out these sort of really subtle feature changes and be able to classify a change in health status from the dolphins, we need a lot of data. So yeah, that's the idea right now.
It's such an amazing concept, right? Being able to monitor health from just sounds. And that means you don't even have to be present to monitor the health of these animals.
Right. That would be the long-term goal. So right now we are present. We're asking for the whistles. We're really lucky that the Navy has this amazing veterinary record staff that keeps all of the health database for each of these specific animals. So on a given day, I can say, okay, on October 19th, 2022, dolphin number one, I have a recording of them, of their signature whistles. And then I can query that health database that the veterinarians have updated all of their blood values, their physicals, all of these samples and data points into this health database. And we look for, did the animal have an infection, or was it tip-top shape? Everything looked great. And that labels those whistles as either dolphin one normal, dolphin one abnormal. And that becomes the input that trains the model. And then the model looks for all of these acoustic features and tries to teach itself the pattern of how it could predict future whistles, whether the animal was healthy or experiencing a period of abnormal health.
And so when you get to that stage, which I know you're not quite at the predicting stage yet, will you be collecting whistles based on going down to the docks and asking them for their whistle? Or is it something where you're just going to be monitoring them passively with those hydrophones in the water and then able to alert should something be different?
Great question. So we sort of are going down those two different avenues at the same time with the long-term goal that they could work together. So right now we have a 4-channel hydrophone array that sits down at the bottom of the bay, and it's recording the whistles of our group of dolphins 24/7. So it's tons of data. We have a free to download program that runs in PAMGuard that's called WAMS, or NMMF Welfare Acoustic Monitoring System. It essentially uses a detector to count the whistles in a given period of time, and it can send us a live email alert when the whistle rate gets higher than what's normal for that period of time. So we've got that running around the clock. We've had that running for about 3 years now. And then simultaneously, we're doing these recordings of the animals when we know it's that animal, we know the health status of that animal, we know everything about that whistle. We're training the computer to be able to classify health status. The long-term idea being, of course, that then at some point you have the hydrophone array that's bringing in data 24/7. It identifies that there's a whistle. That whistle gets passed to one of our classifiers to classify what dolphin is producing the whistle. Once that classifier says it's most likely dolphin one producing the whistle, gets passed to a second classifier that says, okay, based on all the data that we have from dolphin one, would we classify the animal as healthy, normal, everything's hunky-dory? Or is something a little bit off, and we would then recommend maybe the veterinary team or the animal care staff go in and check in on that animal. The hope being that we would be able to early classify changes in health status passively without anybody even laying eyes on the dolphin. It could be 3 a.m. when the array picks up that whistle and classifies it.
And I don't want to forget about what you were just saying, which is you already have a passive system in place in the bay, and it's already sending you alerts should numbers increase. What are the types of things that you're finding when you're getting these alerts? Are there things in the water nearby? Are there animals that are actually potentially in distress? What are some of the things that you're able to glean from that information?
Right, absolutely. So the good news is that those severe instances are extremely rare. So what we're talking about doing is reaching out to stranding networks to glean some data from animals that we know are in distress, who are either being rehabilitated or re-released, and trying to figure out in these instances, what are the whistle rates that we would expect if an animal is in distress, to advise what thresholds would be most important to us. Right now, we tend to get alarms when we have different social mixes or an animal moves to another group or things like that. So events in a more social capacity will cause an increase in whistles, and I'll get my little email alarm. But right now, we don't typically use those because an animal is in distress. It's more trying to figure out what is a threshold that would be meaningful for us to get an alarm, and what do those mean?
And I had the pleasure of recently hearing you speak at the Southwest IMATA Regional Conference, and you were saying there that the current model is targeting almost 80% correct. Is that right?
86% correct is where we're at. We're at about 22,500 whistles that are going into that model. And to give you some context, for those that are doing similar type things with infant cries to try and identify disease state or health changes from the infant cry, the largest database is at about 20,000 infant cries. So the fact that we've already passed that allows us to really collect data at a much faster rate, a lot easier to collect data from these animals. So we can build a foundation that then can be used on other mammals, including infants, to try and be able to predict or classify different changes in health status. So yes, there's a lot of data going in, 14 different dolphins, all their data getting thrown into this model. And yeah, we're really excited that we're at about 86% classification accuracy for these animals. And then in the third year, as you were sort of alluding to earlier, we will test the model in terms of new whistles that it hasn't seen before. So if I collect the whistles today, I pass that to the model and get that classification without knowing what the health status of the animal is based on the database or based on the veterinarian's assessment. And then 2 weeks later, when that database gets updated, we'll be able to check, okay, one, was it accurate? Was it correct in its classification? And two, is there any moments where our whistles would have correctly classified the animal as having a change in health status before the veterinary staff or the database would have classified them that way? Can we early predict changes in health status passively? And that, of course, would be an added win if we could do that.
It's amazing. I mean, the ramifications and just the opportunities available with that are going to be so incredibly cool.
I appreciate that. It's exciting. It's really exciting. We're learning a lot. And yeah, I'm just grateful for the opportunity. And, you know, we're consistently thinking of new ways that we can use these different tools, which has been a lot of fun as well.
Well, and since you mentioned it, there is another way that you're using this tool, and that's through monitoring post-anesthesia. I want to talk a little bit about how you're able to use the same principles we just talked about, monitoring post-procedure anesthesia.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, I like to bring it back to humans to sort of help us set the stage. But if I just underwent an anesthetic procedure, my doctor is probably going to ensure that one, I can open my eyes, that I can see and track, that I can speak, and that I can answer questions coherently. Even if I can open my eyes, if I can't walk around or navigate my environment, they're probably not going to discharge me or send me home. So we want to use these same principles with the dolphins, and all of that communication, the navigation, that all has to happen underwater. So one of the things that we did during a larger Dolvent project, we put in a live feed, same thing. We put the hydrophone in the water and we played it through a speaker out loud for the veterinarians and the animal care staff to listen to. And we also monitored that spectrogram that we talked about earlier, the images of the sound. And what we were looking for, the dolphin was extubated. They were brought into these shallow water pools. And the veterinarians and the trainers are looking for things. Can they remain sternal in the water column? Can they swim around the pool without bumping into things? Can they take nice, clean, crisp breaths? Their rest rate look good? Does their heart rate look good? And so they're monitoring all these things. And what we suggested is that maybe the acoustic behavior could serve as additional biomarkers. So two of the things that we were really interested in was one, echolocation. So we were monitoring as you're allowing the dolphin to swim and we're watching the dolphin swim. Are they using that echolocation? Are they using their sonar to be able to navigate their environment? And is it working? We found that on average, the dolphins started echolocating about 90 minutes following extubation.
Well, such amazing projects between the long 3-year modeling project and the post-procedure monitoring. I know you're also working with a lot of wild animals as well and monitoring their health. So what applications are there from your sound and health projects for these animals' wild counterparts?
Yeah, a lot of what the National Marine Mammal Foundation in partnership with the Navy dolphins is interested in, there's a lot of translational medicine and science going on, right? So we're learning from this unique population that gives us unparalleled access. We're learning so much and then we can apply that knowledge to help save their wild counterparts, to help conserve the species as a whole. So I'm really excited about the idea of applying some of these technologies to wild populations. One, there are different health assessments that go on across the globe where we can kind of monitor the health status of different populations and adding an acoustic component to that. For example, in Sarasota Bay, they've been collecting the whistles from those animals for 50 years now, and they have this incredible vocal catalog, and they are able to use what they know about those animal signature whistles to help keep track and monitor the population using hydrophones all over the bay. So I think that's an incredible opportunity at other locations, especially locations where the animals are more at risk. So that's something I'm really excited about. I think being able to look at whether the features that are different between different populations, really thriving populations and deteriorating populations, will give us a lot of insights as well. So that's a few of the ways that I'm excited about applying the sound and health concept to conservation.
Yeah, well, we'll have to just keep updated on some of those projects. Super cool stuff. And before I let you go, I know that you're looking to apply the sound and health projects, not just to wild animals, but also to help monitor the health and well-being of animals at other facilities. So for those folks listening who are intrigued by this and might want to monitor their populations, do you have any thoughts for them?
Yeah, absolutely. The tools that we're building here is a fantastic proof of concept of ways that monitoring the acoustics of the animals can be really insightful for the animal care teams, the veterinary teams. For some managed care facilities, it can also be a really awesome way to engage with the public who love listening to them as well. So I think there's a lot of opportunities there. We currently are partnered with the University of Queensland and SeaWorld Australia, where we're putting in a WAM system. So that's really exciting. They're starting to already see some of the benefits of acoustic monitoring over there. Things like a mom going into labor, you know, these types of things, you could essentially, by acoustic monitoring, get email alerts to let you know that that animal is changing in their health status. And so I think there's a lot of applications and it's really exciting. And I would love to see acoustic monitoring happening at every managed care facility across the US, but that's just me.
So if folks are interested, are they able to contact you for more information about installing a thing like that?
Absolutely. Yeah. My email is Brittany, brittany.jones@nmmf.org. And yeah, please reach out, email me, and we could chat about what might fit your current situation.
Amazing. Well, Brittany, it has been such a pleasure chatting with you. I think what's really special is we were able to highlight that you're able to monitor the health and well-being of animals from an outlet that we don't typically talk about, especially within veterinary medicine. We don't necessarily think about, oh, acoustic whistles and how that relates to their health, even though we know it does. So thank you so much for sharing your insights and all of these projects. And I'm super excited to have you back on in a couple of years and hear about the success of this program.
I would love that. Thank you so much for your time and all of your energy and excitement. It was awesome to have you at the Navy while we were collecting acoustic physicals, and wonderful to be able to chat with you today. So thanks for having me on.
And that's going to do it for this week's episode of Aquadocs. I'd like to thank Brittany Jones for being on the show this week, our sponsors AAFV and WAVMA, and all of you, our wonderful listeners, for tuning in. And just a quick note as we're wrapping up season 3 of Aquadocs, thank you to everyone for continuing to support us. We truly appreciate it. We're heading into our summer break and we'll be back this fall. In the meantime, a few life updates for you. I'm graduating from vet school in just 3 weeks, so congratulations to all of my fellow 2023 graduates. I'm getting married to my wonderful Aquadocs co-producer and editor, Zach Feig, and starting a rotating internship at Oradell Animal Hospital. If you can't tell, life's about to get real busy. But don't worry, we'll be back in the fall with some awesome episodes. Until then, take care, enjoy your summer, and we'll see you next time here on Aquadocs.